Hello and welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide SA speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
Over to you.
So, welcome everyone again. My name is Brendan. I'm a sexaholic. And glad to be here with you this morning. Things I have Jason to thank for inviting me and the group for having me here. And I'm a sexaholic. It's the truth. You know, what am I supposed to do? I'm sitting here. I got like 2 minutes of meditation. I'm in my head and I'm thinking, oh, you know, I'm sort of there and I'm contemplating. And, you know, I suddenly think of, you know, my ex-sponsor and, you know, how he's, you know, he's just out in Egypt. I thought, oh, Egypt, you know, then I thought, but like, I've just been on a meeting the other day in Iran. I'd like to go to Iran. And then my head is sort of saying, yeah, and the Iranian women are really beautiful. And like, maybe I'm going to find my wife out in Iran. I'm saying this. And I'm just off to the races again. You know, here we go. Like, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, I've been here quite a while. And, you know, I've been living 15 years celibate on my own, sort of really content. I mean, I really enjoy it. You know, I really do. There's a part of me which says that, you know, I should really be in a relationship again and sort of this, that, and that, and my head will contemplate it. But I'm very, 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 I get on very well with myself. You know, I really do. I just sort of, you know, I find it easy going, and I have a very erratic sort of time way. You know, I mean, I went to bed at 3 o'clock last night and I got up at 6 o'clock so that I could be on for this. And so we'll see what happens with the rest of the day. But that's just my life, and that's my own life. And, you know, what's that got to do with step three? Well, first of all, we know we can see that I'm an alcoholic and that I need help. And it says to me in this thing, which was just read out, it said, you know, our description of the sexaholic, et cetera, made clear three pertinent ideas: that we were sexaholic and could not manage our own lives. Well, you know, I obviously can't. That probably no human power could have relieved our sexaholism. It never did. It never did. And that God could and would if he were sought. And when I came into recovery, it was in another program. I came in and I'd been in before and I'd had 3.5 years without taking the, you know, it was for a drink and I hadn't taken a drink for 3.5 years, but I'd done a lot of other things. And because I thought that drink was my real problem. And when I came back into the program 5 years later, I was really hammered. And I really needed help. I was going to 3 meetings a day just to get through the day without picking up a drink. And I could see that my life was a complete disaster and that I was powerless over alcohol and my life was completely unmanageable. And they told me that I was going to need a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. And I just thought, well, I hope it is there. And I came to state three and it said to me that it said, made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Well, first off, I had no understanding of God. I had chosen Pachamama, Mother Earth, to be my higher power because I wanted nothing to do with the religion that I'd been brought up in, primarily because I wanted to get a divorce, but also because I had walked out in it. I had walked out in it and I didn't feel, you know, akin to it. And I just didn't feel I believed it anyway. But they told me that I didn't have to have a specific religion. They just said to me, I didn't have to have somebody else's God. They told me to choose one of my understanding. And I'd been working with indigenous peoples and, you know, and they talked about Mother Earth. And I thought, okay, yeah, that'll do me, you know, whatever is responsible for the beauty of nature. And so that was what I was going to take up with. But it said, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to this higher power. And I thought, I'm not sure, how would I know? How would I know if I've done this? I lie so well and I believe my own lies. So how would I know? And I was really desperate. I mean, I was really desperate. And so I went straight past that. I just said, okay, like grand, whatever it is. And I carried on and I got to the step four and I worked through it and I worked my way through the steps. And I mean, I was on a mission to stay sober and I wasn't going to hang around on anything that I, you know, really couldn't understand. It was just, whatever, you know, whatever. That's it. Like, you know, years later, when I had been through the steps and been through the steps various times and done a lot of inventory work, whatever, I actually sat down and read this chapter because nobody took me through the book. I mean, I listened to the Joe and Charlie tapes, but people weren't really around me, weren't sort of, you know, picking up on it so much. They just said, keep coming back to meetings, keep coming back to meetings. And I knew that just coming to meetings wasn't going to keep me sober. It hadn't kept me sober before. And I didn't think I was going to do it again. And I didn't have the luxury of playing around with my sobriety. I knew that if I didn't get sober, I would, no doubt I would die. It was just a disaster. And, you know, it was interesting because I got into AA, but then I, very soon after that, I realized it was only about a year later. I was in Hawaii and people there started to mention about these S programs. And I went along to one or two meetings and I started to realize, yeah, because I could see that I was being obsessed all the time by lust. And of course, where I wanted to go and meet people was in a bar because that's where I'd always done it. So, you know, it was a real draw to me. And I moved and I was living in another country and I was walking past down the street one day and I passed, you know, an adult shop and there was a mannequin in the window dressed up and this and the other. And I'm on my way to my AA meeting and, you know, I've passed this shop, an idea's entered into my head. And in less than a block, I'm underground with a couple of people and, you know, things are going on and I'm acting out in my head and in 3D color. And the question came up, if you were told that you had to take a drink or a drug to continue on with this acting out, what would you do? And it was quite obvious to me that I would take the drink or the drug. And it really scared me because it meant this would drag me back into my alcoholism and my drugs and everything. And literally would kill me. So, you know, I had to take this really seriously. There was, you know, at that time I was in Japan and there was a Japanese fellowship, which is supposedly quite strong, but there was only a couple of people in the English speaking fellowship. And I'd go to meetings, but nobody was staying sober. Like nobody was staying sober there. They had a week, 2 weeks. I had a fellow who came in who was my first sponsor and he'd get up to about 2 months or whatever. And you know, and then he'd relapse. And, you know, I was kind of going along and I was drifting into this, but that's taking me away a bit from step three. So I knew I needed recovery and I knew that. And so I worked the steps. I worked the steps and there again, when I came in and I was working the steps, I thought if I could just get the steps well done and do the fourth and fifth step and all that sort of stuff, it'll take away my defects and I'll be back with her. Everything would be going grand, hunky dory, you know, that was whatever it was 19 years ago. And I'm not back with her, but so. But working through the steps and going through the steps is when I finally started to understand that working through the steps is how I know if I've done step three. Step three is just a decision. It's not like, let's sit down here and contemplate, like, here, God, I'm giving you my will. Here you go. You know, well, back again. Well, God, take my will. No, I'm back again. Yeah. It's made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand it. That's what the decision is. And it's like the decision to take a trip, you know? You know, if I want to go to Iran, I would have to buy a ticket. And then I'd have to get to the airport. And then I'd have to get on the flight. You know, and then I'm going to have to deal with the fact that, hey, I'm, you know, they're going to be a real hard time getting into the United States anytime from here on in. Yeah. But whatever it is, I'm going to have to take action to go along with the decision. And the decision is, are you going to do it or aren't you going to do it? You know, are you screwed or aren't you? If you are, you know, well then, hey, you know, none of this business will allow to be on step three for a year. Well, good luck to you. You know, tell me how it goes, you know, because that's not what it's about. It's about like saying, are you going to work the program? That's what it is. You know, having had a spiritual awakening, step 12, as the result of this program. And having had the spiritual awakening, well, you know, I don't get the spiritual awakening without working the steps. And this one is just a decision. It is not like sort of thing. But when I came back to it and I read the chapter, I suddenly started to realize, oh, it actually, if I had read it earlier on, it's like kind of, you know, I will buy a, I've done this, you know, I'll buy a stereo player. I'll find it and they'll give you, you know, the sort of things, the instructions are like in an English, it's been translated from some other language. And, you know, and I'm not going to read it anyway, you know, so I'm just going to get the pieces out of the box and I'm going to start putting them together. And then I'm going to find out that one of the pieces doesn't actually fit there because these idiots have just made it wrong. So I'll cut that cable. Now I'll find it this, find it in, and then sort of realize, oh, sugar, the cable was fine. Now what we need is we need some like sort of insulation tape. We'll just tape the whole thing back together again. If I had read the instructions, I would have got there without having had to muck the whole thing up. And here, we've got instructions. I mean, that's what the big book is. The big book is a set of instructions on how the first 100 did this program. And after that part that was read out at the start of this chapter, it said, well, we'll go back to it. It said, you know, we had these three pertinent ideas. We've just read them out. And the last one was that, you know, we were sexaholic, could not manage our own lives. No, probably no human power could have relieved our sexaholism. And see that God could and would if he were sought. And then it says, being convinced, in other words, convinced of those things. Now, the one thing that I have to accept is going, can I believe that God can and will if he sought? Well, the only way I can get that is not because I got in, you know, and I suddenly had this great belief in God. I didn't. I had this, you know, I had taken this higher power, which was like the nature, basically. And because I could see that it was more, that there was some power had made that and it wasn't me. And I had taken that as my higher power and I would walk in nature and I could see it. But I hadn't really got this sort of thing is like, you know, do I believe all these things? Well, I believe that I'm a sexaholic and I can't manage my life. I know that nobody else has been able to help me and that God would and could if he were sought. Well, the only way I can get that is basically from looking around and seeing, are there people who are staying sober here? And what are they saying? Are they saying just come and sit at meetings? And my sponsor was not saying that. He was saying, you know, that you've got to do a lot of stuff. No, you've got to do a lot of stuff. You've got to be sponsored. You've got to sponsor other people. You've got to get to meetings regularly. You've got to go to conventions. You've got to do these things. Those are the things that keep people sober a long time. You know, so, but that's what they were saying. But he was saying that they had to have a higher power. And it says, being convinced we are at step three, okay? Which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. And then it says, just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? So now we're reading out what's in the book. Huh? It says, the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Huh? It's like we're almost always in collision if I'm doing it my way. Now remember what it said to me is I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of God, you know. And somebody has said, you know, that they, my will and my life are my thoughts and my actions. And I'm turning them over to care of God. It's like, sort of, it's not like sort of they're taken away and now I'm a complete puppet. It's just like sort of basically, would you take care of this thought for me? Like, I'm thinking I should do this. What do you reckon? Like, is there some kind of thing? Is there some way that you can help me with this thinking? But I'm here in this, and this says the first requirement. It doesn't say the first suggestion.
It's like meaning.
Yeah, thank you. I'll get it. It says we have to be convinced that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Now, if we've come in here and say, I got a little bit of difficulty here with this sort of thing, and I'm working out, but like, there's a bit of this, a bit of that, whatever, sort of this thing, whatever. I could just get that in order. Everything's going to be hunky-dory, you know? Because, like, really and truly now, you know, don't talk to me about my job. Don't talk to me about my money. Don't talk to me about the way I'm dealing with my folks. It's like, I'm just here for the lust thing, okay? I'm just here for the lust thing. It's saying my will and my life. It's saying the whole shebang, huh? I'm going to have to sort of go to God really in relation to everything. So, no, but I'm doing pretty good. Like, I still got two cars, or I've still got the relationship, or I've still got this, that, and the other. You know, well, you have. But if you don't get, if you're in this program and you're a sexaholic, if you don't get the higher power bit, if you don't get to really accept that when I'm running it on my will, when I'm doing it my way, when I'm telling my kids to do it my way, when I'm extending her to do it my way, when I'm telling them at the job to do it my way, when I'm manipulating things, when I'm doing these sort of things, I am going to be in collision with people and it's not going to go well. Huh? So that's the first, what I call the first consideration. And then we skip over two pages to page 62 of the big book. And it says, in the first paragraph up there, it says that selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. I don't hear lust there at all. It says the root of my troubles is selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Now, you know, it's been pointed out that if I'm being driven, I'm not doing the driving. I'm a passenger in my life. I'm going along. I think I've got some kind of control here, but I haven't, because I'm being driven by my fears. My fear is acting up me, and I'm taking this action because, like, they're going to fire me from that job. So, like, I'm going to get rid of them first of all. And now I'm definitely going to have a trouble. Huh? You know, I've got self-delusion. I can do this. I don't need that. I don't need a higher power. I'm just sort of like, to hell with this sort of thing. Oh, self-seeking, you know, what I want for me. I'm going to take my bit of the pie before they get it. And then the self-pity. Oh, dearie me. Why is it I haven't got a relationship? I've been in this for years. The other person has been there only a short period of time. Now they're married. They're having kids. Like, I'm still, you know, self-pity is going to do my head in. So then we drop down to another paragraph down below it, and it says, this is the third consideration. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the sexaholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Me, I'm, you know, I wake up every morning and I'm in a case of self-will run riot. That's why I have to do the prayer and meditation. Because if I let my head start telling me what to do before I start to say, God, don't let this be about me, there will be trouble. It says above everything. In other words, this is perhaps the most important thing in the whole program. Above everything, we sexaholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Huh? I'm not trying to become a good guy, you know, so I said, you know, because I want to be a good guy. I'm trying to save my life here. I've got to get away from my selfishness, my way of doing it, my fears, my self-pity, my self-delusion, my grasping, because if I don't, it's going to kill me. If it doesn't kill me physically, it'll kill me spiritually and mentally. It says God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Okay, so this is really why I need this higher power. This is why I need this God. I need God to free me from my selfishness. So we have to have God's help. And then the fourth consideration at the bottom of the page, it says, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we have to quit playing God. It didn't work. How do I play God? All the time. I shouldn't be in this job. I shouldn't be here. He shouldn't be president of the country. You know? Like, they are the people in the meeting. They shouldn't be doing it that way. My kids should be doing this. All the time, I'm thinking that I know.
Time?
Well, give me 2 minutes, please. 2 minutes, grace. And so it didn't work. If it worked, I wouldn't be in this mess. So it said, next we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. Now, if God's the director, that means I'm the actor. That means I don't get to write the story. I have to follow directions. What it is. So I sit down in the morning and I write out my page and I just write out a page as I did this morning before I came on. And, you know, and I write out and I take down whatever words is that come straight into my mind. I don't edit it. I try not to have any input into it at all. And then I read it back and it usually tells me to slow down, relax. It's all going okay. As long as I don't muck it up. He's the principal. We're his agents. He's the father and we're his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. If you don't have a keystone, you don't have an arch. Huh? You're not constructing anything. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So in order to be relieved of my selfishness, I need to stay close to my higher power. And I do that by working the program. And that takes me to the third step itself, to the third step prayer. So I like to do those four considerations before I do the fourth step prayer or the third step prayer, because if I do, it tells me why I'm doing it. So that when I'm in the prayer and it says to me, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And, you know, here it's telling me, relieve me of the bondage of self. So what am I doing here? Why am I doing step three? I'm doing it to get free of the selfishness, which is going to kill me. And I'm asking God to relieve me from the difficulties, which are the defects of character, yeah, which are causing me to step on other people's toes. They retaliate. I'm a victim and it's all on the merry-go-round again. So I do the third step as a way to get free of this selfishness, which is going to kill me. Perhaps if I'd known all this before I did step four, I might have done it, but the decision is still, you know, it's still just a decision. So it doesn't take a year to do it. Thanks for letting me share.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.